involved at KKFI can take many forms: listening, volunteering, telling your friends, and of course, making a gift. Thank you so much for your support during our fund drive. You are KKFI. We cannot do this without you. Thank you.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Terry. This morning, Jaws of Justice host David Bell speaks with Professor Jack Lerner, UCI Law, about his co-authored legal guide, Rap on Trial. Rap lyrics are turning up as evidence of crime in courtrooms across the country with increasing regularity. You can hear our discussion of how prosecutors are using rap lyrics to obtain convictions, even while research shows that bringing rap music into the courtroom risks poisoning the jury and bringing bias and prejudice into the proceedings. And we can explain what defense lawyers can do about it. Jack Lerner works to find solutions to problems at the intersection of law and technology, particularly how technology, law, and policy affect creative expression and innovation. Before joining UC Irvine School of Law in 2014, Professor Lerner was clinical professor of law at Gould School of Law and director of USC Intellectual Property and Technology Law Clinic. Listeners can hear Professor Lerner's legal guide, Rap on Trial. The link is on our webpage. This piece is co-authored with Sharis Kubrin and the students at UCI Intellectual Property Arts and Technology Clinic. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. Now our show begins.
Ago driving around with my friends, bass was the big thing for car stereos. Cars literally rattled, and some of the music coming through those speakers, I remember NWA, Ice-T, Too Short, Ice Cube, Public Enemy. And when we would sometimes repeat the lyrics, I can tell you for sure that this white kid from Leawood, Kansas, was not vocalizing my own lived experiences. This is something you can't understand, how I could just kill a man. If you want an image of me saying something similar, just check out the opening scene of Office Space. Dave Herman plays me perfectly. But at the same time, I had a belief that the lyrics reflected almost an autobiography of the black experience. And while some lyrics and some songs may in fact describe actual experiences, racism and unconscious bias create a breeding ground for inferences and conclusions. When rap lyrics are used in the context of criminal trials, these inferences and conclusions can lead to wrongful convictions, convictions where the evidence itself is not enough for beyond a reasonable doubt. To help us understand this phenomenon, we welcome Professor Jack Lerner from the University of California, Irvine Law School, and co-author of a legal guide, Rap on Trial. Full disclosure here, folks. Sitting next to me in the car 30 years ago, turning the bass up, was a high school kid named Jack Lerner, now Professor Lerner. Professor Lerner, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This is great. You know, I guess if we could first start, I guess the first question, Jack, is what is rap music? And the reason I ask that is I'm sure some of our listeners are absolutely aware. Some may have forgotten, and I want to kind of start there to define what it is we're talking about.
Sure. I mean, rap music is an art form, a type of music, type of poetry. And it's a black art form, uses the black vernacular and originated in the black community. It's one form of artistic expression that's sort of a subset or part of a larger movement that originated in the Bronx in the 1970s called hip hop. And so it emerged from the streets of inner city neighborhoods as a reflection of the hopes, concerns, and aspirations of urban black youth. Now, of course, it's become a huge multi-million dollar or even multi-billion dollar industry that's performed all over the world, recorded by lots of different people, not all of them black, but a lot of them still use, even abroad, use the black vernacular in recording and making rap music, where they use a mix of whatever, you know, whether it's a, you know, if it's Cypress Hill, which you mentioned, they use a black vernacular, and they also use elements of Spanish. But what we've seen over the last 30 years is prosecutors regularly take people's rap lyrics and bring them into the courtroom, and they'll take someone's lyrics or a video they might have appeared in and make the whole case about that, instead of about what they can prove about what the person actually did. Or they'll misinterpret and blow the lyrics out of proportion just because it makes their job easier, and they'll use that as a shortcut. So my co-author Sharis Kubrin and I and the students in the UCI Intellectual Property Arts and Technology Clinic out at UC Irvine School of Law, we got together and said we should create a guide for defense attorneys who are trying to deal with this. And one of the things that motivated that is my co-author did some really important experimental research that showed that the mere association with rap music can create a strong negative bias in jurors. And violent lyrics are uniquely viewed as threatening, offensive, dangerous, and literal compared to violent lyrics from other genres just by calling them rap.
So let me stop you there to go back for a sec. I guess, you know, when I think back to listening to those songs, and I still do listen to, I guess, what would be considered rap music, there was a tendency on my part before I became a little more aware, but I still struggle with it, to think of it as autobiographical of the artist. But in fact, falling into that trap is unfair, obviously, to the artist themselves. And so I know in something in your guide that you brought up is what is rap? And there seems to be on the one hand, it's autobiographical potentially for somebody, but on the other end of the spectrum, it's also artistic. And I want to help make that distinction in terms of the artistic, because there's certain components of rap. I know you talk about hyperbole, things that go on in rap competitions, things like that, that almost help us understand rap better and help us understand it as something other than autobiographical.
Well, I mean, look, rap is artistic expression. It is a form of poetry. It is a form of music. It uses many conventional, well-known literary techniques like rhyme, meter, and you can identify. I remember actually in college, one time I actually was learning about 18th century English poetry, and I said, iambic pentameter. I've heard of iambic pentameter. That's what all these old school raps use. But it's also a blend of entertainment and education, right? And so Chuck D famously called it the Black CNN. KRS-One called it edutainment. And Queen Latifah called it a creative outlet that can become like a newspaper that people read with their ears. So rap music has an authenticity and a relevance to the Black experience and the experience of rappers that is authentic. But that shouldn't be confused with reality and with the actual lived experience of individual rappers necessarily. You have a lot of rappers that exaggerate, engage in hyperbole, and you have a lot of unique tropes that are specific to rap music that don't translate to other genres that become confusing for people who aren't familiar with rap. You know, a good one, as you mentioned, is again, hyperbole, right? And so, you know, I remember when Special Ed, he has a line where he says, I own an island in the Pacific. And I don't believe he did actually own an island in the Pacific, right? And at the same time, another genre of within rap music and another convention that became very widespread starting in the late 1980s is gangster rap or gangster hip hop. And gangster rap has violent and extreme lyrics, and it quickly became apparent not just to rappers and not just to people in communities who they were listening to rap, but also to music promoters, record companies, that the more violent and extreme, the more records you sell, right? And this was the case for a somewhat famous rapper and a famous case of a rapper in Louisiana named Mac Phipps. And he was not a gangster rapper, did not have any real experience with any kind of criminal enterprise. He was not into drugs. He did not, you know, have anything to do with that, but he had become a successful rapper rapping about kind of things like partying and things like that. And when he was signed by Master P's label, No Limit Records, they said, you know, you should make some of this gangster stuff and you'll sell a lot more records. And that's exactly what happened. A few years later, he began to be targeted by the police along with everybody else in that rap group because they'd moved out to the suburbs and they were living in white neighborhoods, and it didn't go over well in suburban Lafayette, I believe it was either Lafayette or Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So he had been targeted by the police. There was a shooting at one of his shows, and the police arrested him for it. One of the witnesses later recanted and said she was coerced. Another witness came forward but was not offered to the defense, who said, no, I was there. He didn't do it. And another person came forward with his attorney and said, I actually did this in self-defense, and I am the one who fired the gun that killed this individual at this show. But the police went after Mac Phipps. The DA prosecuted him, and he ended up doing so successfully. And he did it based on Mac Phipps's music and his music, and one song in particular where he said, murder, murder, kill, kill. And this was the centerpiece of the prosecution, even though the evidence was overwhelming that Mac Phipps didn't have anything to do with the murder. And in fact, his parents were at the show because his mother did the merchandise, I think it was. His father was his manager, and he was really full time doing rap music. He didn't have time to do anything else, not anything involving law breaking. So this is just one example, and there are many where the police have made a huge deal out of rap lyrics that really don't reflect the real lived experience. And even while the rap lyrics might be authentic in terms of describing the Black experience or describing the experience of that community or people in that community, they don't necessarily mean that the person actually is the biggest dealer on the block, will kill you if you step to him, will do all these things. But what happens is, as soon as you call it rap music, you know, studies show, numerous studies going back 25 years show, that juries will, or the at least subjects of the experiments will think that the lyrics are more offensive and more literal, and that the person who wrote those lyrics is more likely to be violent simply based on calling them rap.
You know, in your manual, and we put a link up, I suggest everyone take a look at the manual. I think it's great, not just for lawyers, but people interested in seeing how rap could be used as a tool to prosecute. You know, you point out, for example, 50 Cent, who well-known guy who had an album Get Rich or Die Trying and had a song High All the Time. And apparently he explained that he doesn't drink or use drugs. And he didn't back then, that he just put it on there to sell more albums. It's almost as if it seems like in some situations, almost the individuals are pushed, if you will, or led to promote this thug potentially persona when none actually exists. It's a made up character.
Yeah. And I think there's four things about rap that you have to understand that are unique to rap, but that go a long way towards explaining how prosecutors can exploit rap music to put people away and essentially to avoid doing their job and actually proving the case. So the first one is the more violent and extreme, the more respect the rapper gets in the rap community. And as a corollary to that, as I was explaining before, the more authentic you seem, the more respect you get. And as I explained before, the more violent and extreme, the more records you sell. The fourth thing to understand is that when people grow up or live in an area where there's gang activity, where there might be criminal activity, their art might reflect that, but that doesn't mean they're doing that, right? And so if you have gangs around you, they might be people you know. They might be people you grew up with. They might be people that come to your shows and buy your records, and you might give a shout out to them. But that doesn't mean you're in the gang. That doesn't mean that you are, engaging in the kinds of activities that the gang might engage in. But prosecutors, again, routinely exploit this to poison the jury and inject bias into the proceedings.
You know, and then I'd like to talk next then, as we now we have a better idea of what rap is and what it may reflect. Talk a little bit more about the research. You brought it up a little bit, but I'd like to get a little more into it. What is the prejudice, if you will, the unfair prejudice? And we'll use that term later when we talk about federal rules. What is the unfair prejudice that comes up when rap music is introduced or when music is identified as rap music? And what are we going to need to avoid, particularly as defense attorneys, but also just as members of society, if we're ever in a situation where we are jurors or in other situations where rap lyrics are out there, that we don't draw incorrect conclusions or make incorrect inferences?
There are over two decades now of experimental research that shows that merely associating something with rap music can create a strong negative bias in jurors, and that violent lyrics are uniquely viewed as threatening, offensive, dangerous, and literal compared to violent lyrics from other music genres. And so the first experiment, which was then replicated about two decades later by my co-author, Charis Kubrin, who was a criminologist here at UCI, they took the lyrics from the Kingston Trio, which is a white folk group from the 1960s, and they had recorded a song called Bad Man's Blunder. And Bad Man's Blunder goes, in pertinent part, well, early one evening, I was roaming around. I was feeling kind of mean. I shot a deputy down. I strode along home and I went to bed. Well, I laid my pistol up under my head. And so this was shown to a jury, and they said, not to a jury, but to various subjects of the experiment, various individuals drawn from the general public. And they said, okay, this is rap music. This is country music. This is folk music. This is heavy metal music. And just based on that information, the reaction from the jury, or excuse me, from the subjects was really interesting. When it was rap music, they thought it was more threatening. It was more offensive. And later studies show that they thought that the person who wrote them was more dangerous or more likely to have committed a violent crime. That extends even, you know, some of the experiments later said, well, what if the person was on trial for a violent crime versus being accused of something less violent? And even then, the jury thought, well, if it's rap music, then I think the defendant is more likely to have committed a violent crime than the non-rap defendant who was actually on trial or being accused of a violent crime. So this is something now there's been 6 or 10 studies that have shown there's a real danger of unfair prejudice, or in the language of the law, of substantial risk of unfair prejudice when you start calling it rap music.
And you know, what's interesting about that, Jack, is that once you label it rap and the bias, maybe unconscious bias, starts to kind of emerge in some way, and it would seem the next step would be to then look at these lyrics, or be more likely to look at these lyrics, as confessions rather than artistic art form. Because who would think someone out there who's violent and overly sexualized, whatever the stereotypes may be, would be producing art? They have to be producing a confession or an autobiography.
Right. And this is one of the things where I think the racism and bias that is behind the use of rap lyrics in criminal trials really comes out. Because it seems to me that what's really going on is that the prosecutors, and they're assuming, the prosecutors assuming the juries, can't really conceive of these defendants who are almost exclusively young men of color. There's very few instances that don't involve young men of color, black or Latino men. Can't really conceive of them as being poets, as actually having inner lives and having artistic agendas or artistic perspectives that are different from their life, and don't necessarily understand or want to understand the role that rap music plays in these communities, and the fact that you might be claiming to be a gangster, you might claiming to be someone who's very tough, and that has nothing to do with whether you might be super tough or not in real life. And, you know, people who listen to rap music usually understand that distinction, but that's not always the case. It's often not the case when you have a jury, especially when it's an all-white jury. And then you get into juries from communities where there's just not a lot of rap music being played.
You know, it's interesting. It seems like some of these experiments you're talking about, if you have the same lyrics, but you just label it differently, the only difference then essentially being race, if you will, it may be the best example out there that I can think of right now of the impact of racism or impact of unconscious bias on how people think, right? Because you've got the exact same thing, the same lyrics, just calling it two different things, one associated with white, maybe country music, generally one associated black by saying rap. And the difference in the assumption of the intent, of the artist, the character of the artist, potentially who that artist associates with others, and then the danger of that group now, that group of individuals that look like or similar to the artist. It's almost like logarithmic in its ability to prejudice the outcome of a trial.
Well, I think the research clearly shows there's an anti-rap bias, but rap music is a black art form, and even if it's not done by even if the defendant himself isn't black, it's using the black vernacular. It originates in the black community, and it's associated with black culture. And so I think, you know, if it's anti-rap bias, there's very little distinction in my view between anti-rap bias and anti-black racism. And, you know, you could say, well, you know, I don't have a problem with black music. I like Stevie Wonder, whatever, but I don't like rap. And, you know, if you don't like rap aesthetically, that's one thing. But if you're going to say, well, therefore, I'm going to decide this person is more dangerous based on that, that's really a problem. Right. And here's a parallel example. You know, Johnny Cash, famously, he had his song Folsom Prison Blues, and he said, "I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die," which was sampled by a rap group also. But that's another story. We can get a sampling on another call, Dave. But here he said, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. Now, if Johnny Cash were arrested for possession of marijuana, for example, or possession of cocaine, would you expect the police to then say, look, he shot a man in Reno just to watch him die? And there are other lyrics that about criminality that Johnny Cash put out. And, you know, the answer is almost certainly not, right? And there are virtually no examples of non-rap lyrics ever being used or any artistic expression ever being used to convict somebody in court and used as evidence in court. But yet it's extremely common. There's over 500 cases where we've identified over 250 cases where judges have actually written opinions. But we've also identified a number of other cases, and other scholars have as well, where it didn't make it into a written opinion, but that's what was a big factor in the case.
This is David Bell, and you're listening to Jaws of Justice on KKFI. We're talking to Professor Jack Lerner, co-author of Rap on Trial. We're going to take a break to play the calendar. When we return, we're going to talk to Jack, Professor Lerner, about how this bias plays out in criminal trials. We'll be back in a second.
June is Pride Month, and to celebrate, KKFI will be broadcasting a series of informational spots to talk about Pride and what Pride means to members of the LGBTQ plus community.
Hi, my name is Rachel, and I am a lighting and video designer, and I live here in Kansas City. I'm also a trans woman. My first experience with Pride was June 22nd of 2019. That was the day of the very first Trans Pride March in Kansas City. I had only been out for a little over a month. When I heard about the Trans Pride March, I really wanted to go, but I was scared. I was anxious. I didn't know if I could do it. Fortunately, I had a very good friend who called me and said, you know what, let's go to the Pride Parade. After about 5 minutes of being there, I realized that I had no reason to be afraid or anxious or scared because I was amongst friends. We all gathered at a parking lot to hear one of the first speakers along the way. I kind of paused for a moment and looked around, and what I saw filled my heart with joy. I couldn't believe all of the smiling faces, all of the trans pride flags and banners and posters and face paint. It was incredible. And I realized for the very first time since I had come out, I was among my people, my community. I could be myself. And that sense of belonging and that sense of family and community is so important to the LGBTQ plus community. There's very few spaces where we can go and just sort of be ourselves and know that we are amongst people who won't judge us, won't misgender us, and just accept us for who we are. For me, that's the most important part of Pride. I look forward to seeing all of you at this year's Pride celebrations, and I hope that you all continue to keep being fabulous.
Now the calendar for the week of June 28th. According to the CDC, if you're fully vaccinated, you can resume activities that you did prior to the pandemic without wearing a mask or physically distancing, except where required by rules and regulations, including local business and workplace guidance. If you haven't been vaccinated yet, you can find a vaccine. See the facts at kcmo.gov. Legal Aid of Western Missouri can provide free civil legal services to low-income and vulnerable people who live in Jackson County, Missouri. Interested individuals can call 816-474-6750 to apply. Monday Meets is 4 p.m. today, an online event hosted by the Willow Domestic Violence Center, open to everyone on Facebook Live. Monday, June 28th at noon, No More Excuses Coalition meeting is at the Mohart Center Auditorium, 3200 Wayne, Kansas City, Missouri. Monday, June 28th, 6 p.m., there's an event by Corey's Network, open to anyone. They meet to educate the survivors of homicide on topics that will help ease the stress of losing a loved one. For those who can't attend the in-person sessions, there's an online link published on Facebook shortly before the meeting starts. The in-person meeting is at the City House Meeting Room 2, 14300 East U.S. Highway 40, you can enter the building at the doors by Joy Coffee. Someone will be available to let you in the doors, or you may text 816-834-9161 when you arrive. Thursday, July 1st, 6 p.m., The Age of Hate, a candid discussion with Daryl Lamont Jenkins. This is an online event hosted by the ACLU of Missouri and others. Daryl Lamont Jenkins began tracking hate groups in the United States well before the insurrection at the Capitol. You can join to discuss hate groups. See on Facebook. A list of services, meals, and hotlines are available at lawrenceprogressivecalendar.blogspot.com. The list is updated daily. Please take care of yourselves and others. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought into sharp focus the need for health care reforms that promote universal access to affordable care. COVID-19 has devastated the U.S. prison and jail population. My name is Terry, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Stan Thomas. We'll return to our show, David Bell speaking with Professor Jack Lerner.
Welcome back. This is David Bell. You're listening to 90.1 KKFI, Jaws of Justice. We're talking with Professor Jack Lerner. He is co-author of Rap on Trial, along with Charis Kubrin and the students at the UCI Intellectual Property, Arts, and Technology Clinic. When we left off, we were talking about studies about how labeling something rap music versus country music can create or bring about a much different response from individuals, I think indicating at a minimum unconscious bias. But now I want to talk about how that impacts defendants in a criminal trial, and in particular, something that Professor Lerner, and I'm going to call him Jack, we've known each other for a long time, kind of briefly referenced in the first half hour, and that is this law, section 182.5, targeting criminal street gangs in California. Jack, if you could tell us a little bit about that and then give us some examples about how just the mere association of someone with a gang, which could come about through rap lyrics, could bring about an actual criminal conviction.
Well, so to be clear, prosecutors have long used rap lyrics to show participation in criminal street gangs. And sometimes you have some cases where someone is saying, okay, this person is a snitch and we're going to kill that person, and then they kill that person. But you have a lot of other times where someone is in the neighborhood, grew up around people who are in gangs, grew up around criminal activity, and that's what they rap about. And that might be the people that come to their shows, and that doesn't mean that they're in the gang or doing any kind of criminal activity. And in California, there is a special section of the penal code that is targeted at criminal street gang conspiracies. And this is a pretty controversial statute. And it says any person who actively participates in a criminal street gang with knowledge that its members are doing criminal things and who benefits from any criminal conduct by members of that gang is guilty of conspiracy to commit whatever crimes those gang members committed. So we had two situations where rappers, there was no evidence whatsoever that the rapper was engaged in any kind of criminal conspiracy or any kind of, or committed any crimes himself. One whose name was Draco the Ruler, and the other one in LA, and another one named Tiny Doo, who was in San Diego. And they were prosecuted under this statute exclusively based on the things they were saying in their rap music, which had nothing to do with any actual allegations of any actual criminal activity. In this case, Draco the Ruler, whose name is Daryl Caldwell, had gone to a party. After he left the party, someone was shot and killed at the party. There was no evidence that he conspired to have this done, or of course did it, but the police said, based on your raps, you're part of a criminal street gang, and therefore you're guilty of that murder based only on your raps. And the gang in this question is your rap crew, which they called the Stink Team, spelled S-T-I-N-C. Brandon Duncan, who raps as Tiny Doo, was charged with the same crime under the same statute, and And there the judge actually threw that out of court and said, since there's no actual allegation of any crime that this person committed, you can't just prosecute him based on his words. But this is a good example of how prosecutors are now trying to criminalize rap here in California, but really across the country, by making it the centerpiece of the case, or in these two situations, the exclusive basis for the case is just the rap. Brandon Duncan, who rapped as Tiny Doo, spent about 8 months in jail, and he and his co-defendant later obtained a $1.5 million settlement against the city of San Diego. And Daryl Caldwell, who raps as Draco the Ruler, was jailed for over 2.5 years. And when the district attorney of Los Angeles, Jackie Lacey, was voted out last November, the very next day, the prosecutors came in and said, would you like to plea down to time served and you can get out tonight? And he accepted that plea and got out. But he had been jailed for over 2.5 years at that time. Another thing that I think is really pertinent here is when Caldwell was originally arrested, Draco the Ruler was originally arrested, the detective who was kind of the law enforcement, the figure behind a lot of the case, came in to interview Draco and said, we're going to play your rap music. I'm paraphrasing. We're going to play your rap music over and over in front of the jury. We're going to take specific things you've said out of context, and they are going to hate you by the end of the trial. And he actually said this to Daryl Caldwell. And to me, that really is an example of saying, we're going to try to get around a very basic evidentiary rule that says you can't use character evidence. You can't use evidence that just says this person is a bad guy and has a propensity to commit this crime. And that's a big no-no in basic criminal law. I mean, that's a foundational criminal evidence precept. But there are numerous exceptions, right? And one of the exceptions is, well, you can show intent, you can show motive, knowledge, opportunity, identity. And so these exceptions are exploited to allow these rap lyrics in, even though they're clearly being used simply to tar that person and make him look bad and to poison the jury against him.
You know, I want to go back to, because this is when I first read this in your guide. And by the way, I recommend everyone go to endraponTrial.org. There's a lot of resources there that have the guide there that Jack co-authored. But when I saw the statute, I was like, it almost seemed unreal to me. And I'm looking at it now. It says any person who actively participates in any criminal street gang with knowledge that its members engage in or have engaged in a pattern of criminal gang activity and who willfully promotes, further assists, or benefits from any felonious criminal conduct by members of that gang is guilty of conspiracy to commit that felony. And it almost seems that there's no limit to it, because like you said, someone raps about or discusses something in their song, the people they know, people may come to their shows, maybe people they hang out with. But yet from those very lyrics, we're establishing what now we're going to call a gang, and we're going to attribute all of these violent tendencies, all of these criminal tendencies to. And it almost seems just guilt by association, just straight out guilt by association. And even though there may never have been a meeting of the minds to go out and commit any criminal act.
That's right, Dave. And in the Tiny Doo case in San Diego, the prosecution actually argued that Duncan satisfied these requirements because by furthering, assisting, or benefiting from felonious criminal conduct, by virtue of the fact that his rap songs, and I'm not joking here, that his rap songs increased his stature and respect in the community. And he was jailed for 8 months based on this argument. And then finally, the judge threw it out, and ultimately, the people of San Diego had to compensate Brandon Duncan. But, you know, I think it's worth pointing out too that this statute is particularly egregious, and these examples are particularly egregious. But there are a lot of examples based on laws in many states all over the country around this, right? And so a good example is in New Jersey, There was a case called State versus Skinner, and the detective testifying for the state read extensively from the defendant's lyrics to the jury. The trial transcript was 13 pages long of uninterrupted reading of this person's rap lyrics. And the material was full of expletives and included graphic depictions of violence, bloodshed, death, maiming, and dismemberment. You know, so does every other movie that you see at the local Cineplex, but you know, so it's not even necessarily even unique to rap, but the case didn't have anything to do with women or violence with women either, but the material that the state read to the jury also included depictions of rape and other violent, demeaning treatment of women. And the court essentially said, this is not going to lead to a fair trial for this defendant. And there has to be a close nexus between the facts of the alleged crime. And this is the Supreme Court of the state of New Jersey said this in a case called State versus Skinner, if you want to Google it. But the court essentially said you have to have a nexus between the facts that are alleged in the actual indictment and the lyrics. And you can't just read willy-nilly these lyrics, which will totally destroy any chance of a fair trial.
You know, it almost seems like a backdoor for just what almost comes about as overt racism coming out. I'm looking at something that you cite in the manual, page 8, from the American Prosecutors Research Institute, and they put together a 2004 gang prosecution manual, and the manual advises that, quote, most crucial element, unquote, of a successful prosecution is introducing the jury to the, quote, real defendant, who is, and this is again a quote, a criminal wearing a do-rag and throwing a gang sign rather than, quote, nicely tailored individual who appeared during the trial. The manual urges prosecutors to use evidence like rap lyrics to, and again, a quote, invade and exploit the defendant's true personality. It's really shocking, Jack, that's just out there. As a guide to how to convict someone based on what we've talked about before of an artistic expression.
Well, I do find it shocking. I was shocked to read it, and because what's really going on is that the prosecutors are openly saying, hey, you know, use this as character evidence. And again, there's a pretty clear rule in the federal rules. It's rule 404, but Kansas and Missouri and every state in the country has a state law equivalent that says you can't do that. You can't bring in stuff that just makes the defendant look bad, that just makes the defendant look like a criminal, because that's going to jeopardize the right to a fair trial. And so, you know, prosecutors have been really, really open about this. But it's also fair to say courts have gone along, and there are a number of cases where it's really quite clear that this should not have been allowed, and this was not relevant. This was not probative, to use another term from the evidence rules, was not probative, but it didn't matter. And the court said, oh, no, this is fine. This shows who he really is. This shows his identity, and so on and so forth. You know, but it's really interesting. In our research, we uncovered a number of examples of chilling effects where rappers are changing their behavior in response to this phenomenon, right? And one of the best examples is a lyric we mentioned, 50 Cent, earlier. And he has this lyric actually blew me away. It's from a song called Heat that he recorded in 2003. And he says, the drama really means nothing to me. I'll ride by and blow your brains out. There's no time to cock it. No way you can stop it. I do what I gotta do. I don't care if I get caught. The DA can play this MFing tape in court. I'll kill you. And again, so he's saying the DA can play this tape in court. Of course, if it's not a specific threat, there's nothing criminal about the tape itself. But his point is, and he went on Instagram to say the same thing not too long ago, he knows that the police are watching, and rappers know that the police are watching. And of course, the detectives in the Draco the Ruler case in Los Angeles came in and said, we're going to play your tape in court, and we're going to drag you through the mud this way. And another example is in New York City, there's a whole police unit that simply watches the rap scene and logs who's saying what and who's affiliating with what, which this leads to a real sense of surveillance among the rap community in New York City.
So let's talk then about educating jurors, educating judges. In part of your guide goes into the use of experts. And I know on one side, there's a law enforcement gang expert. Maybe you could briefly talk about how that's used by the prosecutor. But also there's, on the other side, there's experts that we can call as defense attorneys to help rebut some of the mistakes that that other expert may be making, and also help us to educate jurors and frankly, educate ourselves in making sure we understand the difference and appreciate the difference between artistic expression and autobiographical content.
Experts are used frequently in both all types of criminal trials and civil trials. It's not difficult to get an expert qualified usually. On the prosecution side, you often have gang experts that come in and say, well, I've been working with gangs. I study gangs. I've been prosecuting gangs for however many years. But then they go on to testify about rap lyrics, and often they misinterpret the rap lyrics. They twist the rap lyrics. They take them out of context, and they're not necessarily qualified to talk about rap. They may not know anything about rap music other than just listening to these defendants' songs. The defense can also bring in expert witnesses, and my co-author Charles Kubrin has served as an expert witness in numerous cases, and they can be used in different ways. One is to discuss rap conventions and put the lyrics in context. And you mentioned educating the jury. Not everyone understands rap, and of course not everyone likes rap, and that's fine. But it's important to understand that if someone says, I'm going to tear your head off, or I'm going to do this, or I'm the biggest dealer on the block, that does not mean they're the biggest dealer on the block. And one of my favorite cases said something just like that. The court said, just because someone raps about dealing drugs does not in fact mean that they deal drugs, which is totally obvious if you listen to rap. So that's one way. And, you know, and also you can talk about hyperbole. You can talk about misogyny that does exist in rap. You can talk about the concept of keeping it real. You can talk about rap battles and all these things. And you can unpack and explain that the experts can explain that rap music does not necessarily, should not necessarily be taken literally. The second way you can use expert witnesses is simply to talk about this experimental research showing that the use of rap lyrics can introduce bias into the proceedings. And finally, and this is a really interesting way, to talk about the meaning of local phrases or lingo. And in California, in Oakland, there was a really interesting case where the famous rapper and movie director Boots Riley was brought in as an expert witness, because one defendant said to another guy, hey, where the licks at? Well, in that context, where the licks at can mean, hey, what's going on? It's kind of like, where's the action? But the prosecution said, no, he was saying, where is the next burglary that we're going to commit, or whatever it was. And Boots Riley said, and successfully testified that the defendant was acquitted. Boots Riley came in and said, no, the phrase where the lick's at can simply mean what's going on, what's happening. And so bringing an expert witness can be useful for the defense. Obviously, sometimes you have to pay for that, and so on, but it's one way to fight back.
And so do you see a trend in terms of your research to publish the guide? Do you see a trend in how society is moving, at least how courts are moving, in the willingness to at least hear from an expert to help explain rap lyrics and the various aspects of artistic expression? Or are they closing down on that? How would you describe it as a trend?
Well, I think that over time, the courts, you know, whether it's the court staff, the clerks for the judges, or the judges themselves, have a better, more nuanced understanding of the role of rap music and are not willing to just simply let in all the rap music, just willy-nilly and let the prosecution read page after page of raps. And so you often see judges nowadays limiting, if they do allow rap music, limiting what can be put in, or simply saying, no, this is not germane. And so we've seen a number of cases in more recent years where courts are sort of starting to say, hey, wait a minute, this is actually really problematic. But, you know, to be fair, out of hundreds of cases, you know, probably 75% of them have allowed the rap lyrics to go in. And we've collected a number of helpful cases where courts have said, wait a minute, this isn't right. And sometimes it'll depend on the case. I mean, there's one case that didn't make it into a judicial opinion where someone said, you know, I shot the guy outside the Olive Garden. And he actually did was convicted of shooting someone outside an Olive Garden. And you know, if you're gonna do that, then it could be an issue. But there are lots of other cases where, you know, there's a lot of amateur rappers out there who might write lyrics that are fanciful and that are talking about all kinds of stuff that is just made up. Right. And one of the most outrageous examples of that was one out of Illinois, where you had a young man who was in college and his car ran out of gas. He left it by the side of the road and the police towed his car, searched his car, and they found some lyrics stuffed in between the car seat and the center console. And the lyric said, "Send $2 to a PayPal account. If this account doesn't reach 50,000 in the next 7 days, then a murderous rampage similar to the Virginia Tech shooting will occur at another highly populated university." And so he was convicted based only on those lyrics of attempted terroristic threat. But, you know, he had other lyrics that said things like, "Let them booty cheeks hop. So pop it, mommy, pop it. I'm going to do it like this, daddy. Follow that thing to the ground when she drop it." He was basically a wannabe gangster rapper, and ultimately he was acquitted by a court of appeals, but not after he had been convicted of, again, attempted terroristic threat. He didn't deliver those lyrics to anyone, but the police saw that, and then they found other lyrics, you know, kind of wannabe gangster lyrics in his apartment, and convicted him of this very serious crime that would have put him away for many years. And he ended up being in jail for quite some time while the process made its way through the court, while the case made its way through the court system. But again, you know, this is a situation where they saw lyrics and said, the lyrics are really a crime and we should put this person away.
And, you know, I want to again get everyone to go to endraponTrial.org. Not only is the guide there, but there's also other materials for practitioners. And for those out there that aren't lawyers but enjoy learning about the law, there's cases there, cases that Professor Lerner's talked about, where you can actually read what happened factually and then how judges go through their decisions to justify however they decide to rule. You know, Jack, we only have about, I think, 2 or 3 minutes left. I know you wanted to talk about, we're going to go back to where we began, which is when we were younger. And I remember sitting in the car as we're listening to this, and I remember you liked a particular show on 90.1. And I think you had indicated to me when we talked about the show that kind of helped open your eyes to rap lyrics and perhaps other issues associated. Could you tell us about that?
You know, I have to tell you, Dave, KKFI is probably as responsible as anyone for this Rap on Trial Legal Guide. There was a show back in the late 80s and early 90s called Point Blank with Lloyd Daniel, who later went on to serve in the Missouri legislature. And this show had lots of rap music, but it also had speeches from Amiri Baraka and Malcolm X and all kinds of other people that I hadn't been exposed to previously, or if I had, it was in a textbook. And that really opened my eyes to the fact that there's a lot more out there than what a kid from Overland Park might have experienced, you know, with his own experience. And that really helped me help broaden my horizons. And so it's really a privilege to come back to KKFI and talk about this issue and talk about the way that rap music works, but also the way that it's being misused around the country and what we can do about it.
You know, Jack, I've really enjoyed talking to you about this subject. You've absolutely opened my eyes to some things that I really hadn't thought about. Is from going all the way back when we were in high school with Cypress Hill playing to now. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. And I really want to get everyone to go to endraponTrial.org. to just check out the resources there, because I think, again, not only for the lawyers out there, but for everybody, there's it just gives you some ideas to think about on how you approach life and people in it. So, Jack, I just want to say thanks for joining us today.
It's really my privilege. Thank you so much for having me.
This is David Bell, and you're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI.
This beat, dump it. This drama really means nothing to me. I ride by and blow your brains out. It's no time to cock it. No way you can stop it. We'll run up on you with them things out. Things out. I do what I gotta do. I don't care if I get caught. The DA could play this mother tape in court. I'll kill you.
I ain't playing. Baby, I'm sorry. I ain't playing.
Slipping, I'ma kick.
I ain't playing. Hear what I'm saying, homie. I ain't playing.
Keep thinking I'm candy. To your skull get popped and your brain pop out the top like Jack in a Box. Yeah. In the hood, summertime is a killing season. It's hot out, just that's a good enough reason. Woo. I see gangsters get religious when they start bleeding. Say, Lord Jesus help me, 'cause he's leaping. When that window roll down and that AK come out, you can squeeze your little handgun until you run out. Then you can run for your backup. The machine gun shells don't tear your back up. Guns on your side, I'm alright with that. 'Cause we gon' reload them clips and come right back. It's a fact, homie. You go against me, I get the drop. If you could duck, you're lucky and the lady luck. Look, don't think you safe 'cause you moved out the hood. 'Cause your mama's still around, dog, and that ain't good. If you was smart, you'd be shook at me. 'Cause I get tired of looking for you. Spray your mama crib and let y'all look for me. This beat cocking and dumping. The drama really means nothing to me. I ride by and blow your brains out.
Brains out.
There's no time to cock it. No way to stop it. When run up on you with them bangs out.
Bangs out.
I do what I gotta do. I don't care if I get caught. The DA could place the tape in court. I'll kill you.
I ain't playing. Hear what I'm saying, homie. I ain't playing.
Catch you slipping, I'ma kill you.
I ain't playing. Hear what I'm saying, homie. I ain't playing.
My heart bleeds for you. I can't wait to get to you. Behind the twinkle in your eyes, I can see this in you. Cause you know the streets tough. So there'll be no white flags and no peace talk. I got my back against the wind. I'm down to ride till the sun burn out. If I die today, I'm happy how my life turned out. See the shootouts that I'm being in them by myself. Locked up, I was in a box by myself. I done made myself a millionaire by myself. Now shit changed, I can hide some help. I done heard about the 50 grand you put in the hood. But you shoot a finna get shot, it won't do him no good. With a pistol, I define the definition of pain. If you survive, the bones are still hurt when it rains. Oh, you a pawn playing Battleship, but well, this ain't the same. Look, homie, it's a whole different type of war game. See, the losers end up in shackles of my chains. Or laid out in the street, leaking out their brains. This beat cocking and dumping, the drama really means nothing to me. I ride by and blow your brains out.
Brains out.
It's no time to cock it. No way to stop it when it's run up on you with them bangs out.
Bangs out.
I do what I gotta do. I don't care if I get caught. The DA could play this my tape in court. I'll kill you.
I ain't playing. Hear what I'm saying. I ain't playing.
Catch you slipping, I'ma kill you.
I ain't playing. But I'm saying, homie, I ain't playing.
After the fist fight, it's gunfire, boy, you get the best,
get the
of,
best
me.
Of me.
You don't want to get shot, I suggest you don't go testing, testing me. All the wrong I've done, the law still deep, my blessing me.
Blessing me.
Been the wrong rap, cause Dr. Dre got the recipe.
Recipe. Recipe.
Yeah. Hey, Dre, got me feeling real bulletproof up this. Cause the windows on my beard is bulletproof. Cause my vest is bulletproof. Cause my mat is bulletproof. But the doc said if I get hit, I might get a concussion. But better that than a hole in the head, right?
Sitting here in my prime. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.
We are in concert and conversation with musicians from rural Cajun and New Orleans Creole cultures. Singer-songwriter Zachary Richon walks creatively between Louisiana French and Americana, while jazz banjo man Don Vappy updates musical history. It's American Roots Live from PRX.
This coming Wednesday from 7 to 9 p.m. on KKFI.
Well, I guess I better do something with that old thing. Fine, honey, I'll get rid of it. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, you can turn your used-up car, boat, truck, van, or motorcycle into the programs you know and love right here on